This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
From KMOX Sports.
Come on, let's get going now.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Wynn swings and he drives that to left field. Back to the track and gone!
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
Now, Matt Pauley and the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome into the downtown studios of KMOX for a Graybar Sports Open Line. I'm Jen Cease, filling in for Matt Pauley tonight. Man, I really like Matt Pauley's open. That's a nice, I'm ready to go play some baseball.
It hypes you up, Jen?
It does hype me up. I mean, the city spotlight has a good one too, but Matt's is pretty cool. Kyle Sixto, you just heard him, is here with me in studio on the controls. Great to have you with us for a show that will be about an hour and 40 minutes. This is because it'll be leading up to SLU Men's Billikens basketball as they take on number 3 seed Arkansas State in the NIT tournament tonight. That game is at 8 p.m. tonight on KMOX, so definitely stay tuned after Sports Open Line, and pregame starts at 7:45. So this hour and 45 minutes, we're going to talk some Cardinal baseball, City SC soccer, and men's college basketball. So let's get to it right away with Cardinals baseball. The MLB regular season schedule is already underway with the Dodgers over the Cubs 4-1. For the Cards, though, it's still 9 days away, taking on the Minnesota Twins at Busch Stadium on March 27th. They tied 4-4 today in its preseason game with the Florida Marlins. Before the game, Cards manager Ali Marmol spent a little bit of time with the press. He talked initially about the importance of having coaching staff that really specializes in player development that is beneficial for the team.
Relatability. It's instant buy-in. Talked about it a decent amount this morning with our front office group. And it's when you have guys that are as relatable and are passionate about pouring into young guys as a John Jay, as a Descalzo. But you add Brownie to that mix as well as a new addition. Like, they're getting instant buy-in. And a lot of that is because of how active they were in the offseason. When you look at the trips that were taken by Brownie to go visit guys in their home turf, you leave those meetings and the players know that you care, and it allows you to hit the ground running when you get to spring, where you can hold them accountable and you can already draw from that well of, hey, they care, but they're still going to be hard on me. And it's allowed us to kind of expedite this development process. But homegrown guys like Jay and Scalzo, like, it's you put your staff together the same way you put a roster together, man. You want to be able to fill certain gaps, and what they bring to the table, being able to speak to what it looks like to win here is important. And they've done a nice job of instilling those values even in their short time.
Ali also talked about Jose Fermin. Of course, his superpower is making contact, which was what makes him so valuable.
Yeah, you have a guy that just doesn't swing and miss nearly at the rate of the league. That is his superpower, is he finds a way to get the bat on the ball, right? So yesterday you have a situation where you have two outs and you're looking for that contact. We were talking about it in the morning meeting, and then it presented itself in the game where it's like, this is exactly the situation we're talking about, where there's a lot of value in just not swinging and missing, and he took advantage of those opportunities.
Of course, he homered in today's game, so a prescient view from Ali Marmol. That was nice to hear. And last but not least, reliever Nick Anderson has been sent to minor league camp today. Ali talks about his spring. He showed flashes of what he once was back with the Rays.
He did a nice job of showing flashes of what gives him success, is the way I would put it. When you look at when Anderson's good, there's a combination of velo and vert, where he's 94, 95, and he's touching the 18s and 19s with his vertical break, 20s. And that's what makes it tough on a hitter, regardless of righty, lefty.
All right, so that's some Cardinals baseball, but we're not done. We have more Cardinals baseball coming up. We're going to join up with Kevin Wheeler with KMOX Sports, who can talk more Cardinals baseball than I would possibly have questions to ask of him. And then we'll also hear Tom Ackerman's Sunday conversation with John Mozeliak. So let's get to that up next. Stay right here for more on a Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Jen C's here, back with you on a Gray Bar Sports Open Line, filling in for Matt Pauly this evening. We just went to break talking a little bit about Cardinals spring training and their 4-4 tie with the Florida Marlins. Joining me now, Kevin Wheeler of KMOX Sports. Kevin, thanks for joining me. I've never had a chance to talk with you on air. It's so nice to speak with you.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was just thinking about that the other day. I'm like, man, Jen and I have never had a chance to do a segment, so I'm glad we get to do it.
Yeah, I only get to hear you either, of course, doing sports and when you're doing the Gas House Gang, which you guys sound like you're having a little too much fun doing.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you put four dorks into a room to talk sports. You get weird.
I have to ask you, before I get to the serious Cardinals questions, what is your favorite thing about doing that? You know, it's a little bit of a different format that if you grew up on KMOX listening, which I did because my dad listened to news and sports. It's a little bit of a different, that podcasty-like format. What's the funnest part for you?
You know, it's getting to do things with all of the guys. You know, Tom and I for years have worked together, right? I mean, so, you know, I was at KMOX for 7 or 8 years in my first run, and now I've been back for 5, and we work opposite schedules. You know, Tom's in the morning, I'm usually in the evening when I was doing Cardinals baseball, or now I'm doing afternoon drive. So we never got to do a lot, especially not hosting, although, you know, it'd be a little bit here and there. And then with Matt Pauly, kind of the same, right? Because Matt came in and took over where I left off on Sports Open Line and covering the Cards. So, yeah, we do some segments here and there. You know, I'll join him a little bit on Sports Open Line or whatever. And we just never got that much in depth regularly all the time. And then, obviously, I've known Bernie forever. You know, we were co-workers at a sports station. He did the morning and I did the midday right after him. So we would have a crossover and we saw each other every day. But we didn't just do whole shows together. So it's really kind of cool to get to take all of these guys, three buddies, who we've all, you know, I've known all of them forever, Matt less, just, you know, based on the schedule of events, and get to do this every day. Because we've all listened to each other, we've known each other forever, but it's cool to be able to kick things around the way that we do. And we all have a good sense of humor, right? It's fun to be with a group of people where we can argue with each other or pick on each other every once in a while, and everybody gets it.
That's great. In fact, I have a story myself. I've produced Tom Ackerman and Bernie Miklas like way back in the day, but haven't had a chance to really work side by side with everybody. So great to have you here. Of course, switching to serious Cardinals talk, you know, yesterday we had John Roderick on, and I also put Kyle Sixta on the air just a little bit. And, you know, talking a little bit about the possibility of a 6-man rotation to start the season. And the question that came up, and I'm sure you're already thinking about this, is like, you know, the idea of resting, you know, getting the appropriate amount of rest, which we know is important for all athletes, especially pitchers. But at the same time, are you trading off then repetitions for the more inexperienced or younger players?
Yeah, typically I hate six-man rotation. I hate the idea of it. But again, I'm okay with anything when it's an adaptation to circumstance, right? If it's something that you're forcing, I'm not a fan of it. If it's something that you're looking at and saying, man, this could be helpful because of X, Y, and Z, I'm open to anything in that way, right? Just like the opener in the baseball. I'm not a fan of it. I don't like it. But I understand that sometimes it's a solution to a short-term problem, and if that's the case, wonderful. So having said that, and Bernie and I talked about this today on Gas House, in this particular case, I think I'd be okay with the idea for a few reasons. I mean, one is you don't have the – you see, my biggest worry about a six-man rotation is anytime you add a sixth person, that's taking away essentially 20% of the work from your best guys, right? So that means fewer starts for Sonny Gray. It means fewer starts for Eric Fetty. And in the end, I don't think that's a good thing when you're trying to win, is to have fewer starts from your best pitchers. That said, you know, Sonny got a little bit of a late start to the spring this year by design, because they're trying to manage his workload so that they can keep him from running out of gas at the end of the year. Because you notice, like, late last year, he was a little less than he had been earlier in the year. So the idea is trying to manage this so that he will be at his peak later on and remain at his peak later on is probably the best way to put that. And then you have Eric Fetty, who's only been back from overseas for a year, and he worked a pretty good number of innings last year, so you may want to keep an eye on that. And then you have guys like Matz, who's hurt a lot, and Michaelis, who's not been very good for a couple years. And as you're kind of rolling down this list of things, and Andre Pallante was really in his first year last year making an extensive number of starts, as opposed to a guy that was working in relief at the major league level before that. So you can add it all up, and you're like, yeah, you know, combine that with wanting to see more of Michael McGreevy, and I can see how it makes sense, where you can manage some workloads in a couple of places, make sure you keep guys healthy, and then also make sure that you're getting enough looks for your young guy to make it worthwhile keeping him. It's not easy. There are a lot of other things you have to manage, and somebody in that group probably has to work out of the bullpen a little bit at least sometimes. But I'm okay with the idea for this team right now, but I don't want it to be a whole season long plan. I'd like it to get back to five man at some point.
Ah, is there a particular point in the season that you would, you know, the season's long, that you would like to see that happen
by?
I
don't know if it would be specific. It would be more performance based, right? Mm-hmm. So if there's somebody in that group that's just not going well, we'll get them out, right?
Quick adjustment.
You don't need to replace them, right? But let's say you only do it for 6-7 weeks, 8 weeks, or 2 months. Let's say you do it through May. In that time, you've then essentially saved bullets, right, for somebody like Sonny, if you're trying to, you know, keep him from wearing out later in the year. Because he is 34 now. Actually, I think he's in his age 35 season. So you're going to be more careful with that. And he's your best guy, so you need him to be able to pitch well throughout the year. And look, we all know this is kind of a weird year when it comes to expectations. You know, they're not, quote unquote, going for it the way that they normally do. And I'm not going to say reset, because they say that all the time. But we know that it's a little bit of a different year. But if you find yourself in contention in September, it'd be nice to know that Sonny Gray is feeling good and is better for the postseason, right? That he's healthy and he's, you know, he's got some gas left in the tank rather than burn him out. So, you know, if I'm looking at it, it's mostly based on performance. But if I had to pick a range, you know, somewhere in early June, I'd like five guys to kind of be the ones you choose to roll with.
We just brought up Sonny Gray and, of course, getting the tip of the cap, so to speak, from John Mozeliak, saying he's our guy on opening day. Now that we know that, is there a different player that you might be more curious about when it comes to whether or not they'll be on the opening day roster?
Well, they got a couple of interesting things. I mean, like, we've been talking nonstop about center field. You know, last year they didn't get a lot of production out of center field. It was really weak, to be honest. And, you know, you have Michael Ciani, who's a great defender, who was part of the mix last year. You have Lars Nootbaar, who can play there, which I think going to end up being the solution early in the year. And then, obviously, Victor Scott, who is one of the most exciting young players in the organization. I mean, this is a guy that stole 100 bases in the minors. You know, showed the ability to be a good offensive player at times in the minors, but he struggled at the plate last year, both in the big leagues and at AAA. But he showed up this year and he's doing everything you ask him to do. He's hitting the ball harder. He's playing better defensively. He's doing some simple things better, right? He's always had speed in the outfield. but he's taking better angles. He's getting better jumps. His anticipation is better because he's doing a lot of work with John Jay. And, you know, I'm a big fan of John Jay. I've followed John since he was a freshman in college because he went to Miami and I played at Miami also. So I've always kept up with the program. And John is one of those guys that has been schooled in the best fundamentals since he was even a high school kid. Like, that's just what he's really good at. And he's helping kind of translate that to Victor Scott, to Lars Nootbaar, to Jordan Walker. And you've seen the difference in Scott. So here you have a young guy who is doing everything the team said he needed to do to be a big leaguer, and they may not make the team, which is really interesting. But it all depends to me on why they choose to send him down. If they're sending him down to play Michael Ciani in center field, it's a pretty big mistake. Ciani is a great guy. He plays hard. He's a great defender, but he just can't hit. And he never did in the minors. He's just never been a guy. It's always been the knock on him. He doesn't have a lot of offensive upside. So if you're going to send Scott down, it really means that you're planning on Nootbaar in center and then Donovan in left, Nolan Gorman at second. And then that opens up DH for Alec Burleson. And I think the root of their concern is wanting to get those at bats for Burleson and Gorman, especially. And if Victor Scott's playing center field, one of those guys is going to have to come out. And I don't think they want to start off that way. I think they want those guys to have some runway early. So it's complicated. That's, to me, the most interesting battle in camp. I think most everything else is kind of settled, except maybe a bullpen spot or two. But I think most of that's kind of settling in now, too, because we've seen performance up to this point that would tell you that guys like Chris Roycroft and Kyle Leahy have been very good and very consistent and been good at and been doing everything you've asked them to do. And their only question really is, are they going to commit to a veteran guy like Nick Anderson or let him, because if they don't commit a roster spot to him, he has the ability to become a free agent and go find a better place to play. So, I mean, that's basically it as far as who's making the team and who's going to have an impact on the roster. Really, we're kind of down to those decisions.
All right, last one, I promise, and I'll let you go. I so appreciate your time today. Pedro Páez homered in today's game. What do you think of the split between him and Herrera behind the plate?
Man, this is one of the best questions, because the Cardinals historically have valued defense behind the plate. You know, we just got done watching, I think, one of the two greatest defensive catchers of all time wrap up his career a couple years ago in Yadier Molina. So we got to watch that for so long, right? For 20 years, you had one of the best of all time. And even before that, you had Mike Matheny, who's a great catcher and a gold glover in his own right. And not long before that, you have Tom Pagnozzi. You know, and go back even further, Daryl Porter. They've always had really outstanding catchers, even going back to Tim McCarver for the team in the 60s. They've always valued defense back there. And Páez is the better defensive player. But then you have Ivan Herrera, who's a hitter, and I mean a real one, like a legitimately quality hitter who hits the ball hard, who draws walks, who can hit for power. And I think it's a really interesting dilemma that they have to figure out. I think they'll end up splitting pretty close to down the middle early. And then if one guy rolls with it, like if Herrera is just hitting so well you can't take him out, then I think he's going to be in there. But it probably just makes sense, Jen, to play it based on your matchup. So if you're going up against a team that runs a lot, you probably want to play Páez a little bit. He's a better thrower and does a better job controlling the other team's running game. If you need some offense, if you're in a spot where you're not hitting all that well at a team, well, then you got to play Herrera because he's the better hitter of the two, and it's not really all that close. So I think it'll kind of sort itself out as the season goes along. But early on, I would expect some of that playing of matchups and figuring out what's needed on a given day to win.
Not a bad thing to have a lot of tools in your tool belt to pick from, eh?
No, not especially not at that position. When you have a guy like Herrera, who's a good enough hitter to also maybe get some time at DH, that's a really good sign. And obviously, you know, he's been working on his defense. We'll see if that improves. But that's a pretty good thing to have. And then they've got another guy, not to bore you with too much of my nerdy stuff, but they got a kid who's going to be at AAA this year named Jimmy Crooks, who's a phenomenal catcher, also a good hitter. There's another guy that'll be at AA, and Leo Bernal, who's also really good. Like, they're loaded back there for the coming years. So it's really important, I think, to find out about Herrera and Páez as much as you can this year.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate you joining me, and look forward to another spring training game tomorrow with the St. Louis Cardinals taking on the Washington Nationals again.
All right, good catching up. We'll talk to you soon, Jen.
Thanks a lot. That was Kevin Wheeler with KMOX Sports. More Cardinal baseball to come. We'll listen back to a little bit of the conversation between Tom Ackerman and Sunday morning Sports on a Sunday Morning guest, Cards President of Operations, John Mozeliak. That coming up next here on KMOX. Welcome back on a Graybar Sports Open Line. Jennifer Sees filling in for Matt Pauly. Well, on Sunday morning, KMOX Sports Director Tom Ackerman had his weekly visit with John Mozeliak, President of Operations for the St. Louis Cardinals. Let's listen back to a little bit of their conversation about spring training as well as opening day outlook.
Let's go to the ballpark now. We're joined by Cardinals President of Baseball Operations, John Mozeliak, as the Cardinals take on the Marlins this afternoon. Good morning, Mo, and good afternoon here in Florida.
Yeah, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks again for the accommodations, as always. You provide us with a great workspace, and it's been a good ride down here, so we appreciate it.
Good. Glad to hear that.
Yep, absolutely. You have a busy week here coming. Opening day is March 27th. 1 week from today, you will break camp and get ready to head north. Just your overall thoughts on where you are right now. I can tell you, for me, calling the game yesterday was a lot of fun. Offense is fun. The Cardinals put 9 on the board and beat the Blue Jays 9-5.
Yeah, that was nice to watch. With regard to what this week looks like, obviously there's going to be a lot of transition going on in the sense of trying to narrow down our roster and really positioning ourselves for the following week when we open in St. Louis. But in the meantime, we want to, you know, communicate with our players, let them know which direction they're heading, i.e. Memphis or St. Louis. We'll probably make final roster decisions some point next weekend. But in the meantime, we'll start to get people, for logistical purposes, understanding where they're headed. And so there'll be a lot of meetings, a lot of talking, and hopefully over the next 72 hours, a lot of clarity for some people.
Yeah, most recently, the more, I guess, a flurry of moves following Phil Maton. You know, Graceffo optioned, O'Brien moves to minor league camp. You had Munoz as well. A little more clarity, I would imagine, at bullpen after the Maton move?
Yeah, I think everybody can sort of like squint and see where this is headed. So, you know, there's still a few bubble questions or some uncertainty with what exactly we're going to look like. But we're going to allow, you know, this week to play out, and then we'll try to make those decisions by some point next weekend.
And when it comes to the rotation, are you still – at the moment, stretching out Matthew Liberatore, would I be accurate to say that you still have 7 going for a 5-man rotation?
Yeah, that's right. He'll definitely get one more opportunity to stretch out. But clearly, it's easier to take that step back and try to have someone that hasn't pitched more than an inning or two to try to get 4 or 5 out of. So trying to ramp these guys up, give us as much flexibility as possible, and you know, fingers crossed, these guys keep throwing the ball well.
McGreevy's had a good camp, gives up the home run to Juan Soto, and then really showed something, didn't he? How he was able to bear down and finish that Mets game strong.
Yeah, absolutely. That was great to see. Obviously, as you pointed out, gave up the solo shot to Soto, which was a very loud home run. he definitely didn't miss it. But yeah, McGreevy has had a really good camp, and it's great to watch.
And then, you know, we've talked bullpen starters, those competitions going on right now. But back to Maton, the point was made by Ollie, and I think you alluded to this as well. This is a move that appears to also be designed to take some pressure off of your young players as they develop. So Maton would handle high-leverage situations, whereas, let's say, a Roycroft, if he were to make the team, wouldn't have to do that right away. Would I be accurate in saying that?
Yes, but it's also equally about just, I've always like felt like when you have a strong bullpen, you have someone in there that can help younger guys understand, like, hey, 6th inning, if such and such gets on, you need to start thinking you might have to get up. So it's almost like having that like additional coach in the bullpen. But sometimes having it come from a player, players respond better. So it's just another voice to help these guys understand what daily preparation looks like, what in-game preparation looks like. And then ultimately, when you get that call, how quickly you prepare and how you then adjust into a game-like setting. So, you know, he checks a lot of boxes for us. He is a player or pitcher that I've had interest in over the last couple of years. So I was really glad that we were able to bring him on board, because I do think he'll be a benefit for us.
Appreciate your time as always on the program, and thanks again for all that you do for us as a radio station here down in Jupiter, and we'll catch up with you real soon.
All right, sounds good. Thank you.
That was John Mozeliak visiting with Tom Ackerman on just this past Sunday. Stay with us. We flip over to MLS soccer, city soccer, in fact, and that's coming up next on KMOX.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW, because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour, the boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on King MOX.
Rolling on with Sports Open Line, Jen C's filling in for Matt Pauley. We switch over to soccer now, city soccer. Lori Lindsay, game analyst for MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. She's also on NWSL games, former U.S. women's team, national team midfielder. Lori, thanks for joining me to talk a little bit of soccer.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jen.
Absolutely. Well, I know I got to get to City, but since you also do NWSL, wanted to quick ask a question is, how'd you feel about opening weekend for the NWSL, and what are you most excited about for what's just beginning in their 2025 season?
Yeah, wild opening weekend, to say the least. Well, I was on the Orlando versus Chicago, so we had the biggest score gap, 6-0 in favor of Orlando versus Chicago. So, and then there's a ton of 1-1 ties. So I felt lucky for that. However, going to be a fun season. Really looking forward to seeing if Orlando can go back-to-back with championships.
Yeah, for sure.
It should be fun.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so doing my due diligence and crossing over into City. I was at City practice today. I usually go a couple times a week on the broadcast, our radio broadcast for them, and watch them train. Of course, training is always competitive. Did you get a chance to, I know you've got to preview your game into Philly, but of course, in doing so, I'm sure you looked at the Seattle game and their games prior. You know, what strikes you? City's, you know, had three coaches in three seasons, yeah, so to speak, or going into their third season with a change in style that the players are still adjusting to. However, got to give them props. They're undefeated. They're the only MLS team not to be scored on yet. Not a bad deal going into Philly.
Yeah, I would say that is the biggest thing that stood out, and what a incredible start to the season. I know a couple games ago there were questions on like where the goal is going to come from, but obviously that was answered in the Galaxy game with a 3-0 win. And then even though I would say in this past game against Seattle, if Seattle controlled more of the ball, I would just say that, you know, I think the thing that's been fun to watch is the St. Louis team being so stingy defensively and showing that you can get the job done even if you don't have the majority of the possession. And I think that's been the biggest surprise. And I don't know if I'd call it surprise, but biggest change, obviously, in terms of the style, because Bradley Carnell, now the Philadelphia head coach, which is going to be a fun and interesting dynamic come this weekend. They were obviously in the opening year of the club, much more wide open, scored a ton of goals, but also got scored on a ton. So now to see this team be pretty stingy defensively, I think that is going to be a huge aspect going into this game against Philly this weekend.
What are your impressions of two teams right now? I think even though Coach Olaf Melberg says, hey, listen, if we're winning, I don't really care so much about possession. I do think secretly he cares a little bit about possession, that it is only in the 30s or so. But to Bradley Carnell, knowing Coach Carnell from when he was at City, really didn't care as long as the goals were going in. So what does that look like when two teams maybe are used to lower possession? Somebody's got to have the ball.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it is interesting because, I mean, the kind of saying is to control the score, you have to control the game, which is like control the ball. So I would imagine that both these coaches sometimes want to have a little bit more possession as well, particularly St. Louis. But, you know, one of the interesting things for Philadelphia in particular this past weekend is we saw a Nashville team, that's who they played, ended up losing. Philadelphia did 3-1 in that game. And Nashville was just like, they were physical. They were really organized defensively. I also felt like they didn't care to have possession, especially in wrong areas. And they just looked to play direct and they capitalized on it. And I would say that's because this Philadelphia team, one, they'll press you really high and they're really intense about the press. And also they play a high back line where at times they don't look the most comfortable in that. So I would imagine this is something similar to how St. Louis might approach this game. Like, listen, we're not going to try to have the ball in dangerous areas. We're going to be tight defensively, and then we'll look to capitalize on our chances. And obviously, they've been shown to do that. They've been a great free kick this past weekend. But I think the biggest thing, the last thing I'll say about this, is that Philadelphia is going to have like 6 to 7 starters missing because of international break. So that is going to be a huge advantage, given that St. Louis doesn't have that amount. So I think that is something that also they'll look to capitalize on.
Now, I know that Coach Melberg would prefer to be able to work on the break, work less on the break. Do we still have Lori?
Yes.
Oh, great, great. I heard your phone, so I wasn't sure if you're still there. Would also like to attack in a number of ways. So, of course, he's got defense tightened up, which is great. It probably allowed Ben Lunt to sort of seamlessly slide in for Roman Berkey, which was a big concern going in. That was big news going in the game. However, I've heard him talk a number of times about wanting to be sure City can score in a number of ways. So, of course, set pieces are great. We know City likes to go on the break, but building up through possession and scoring that way, and I wonder if that's going to be an ability to do against the Philadelphia Union, given the way you're talking about them playing. Maybe the break is going to be the way to go for City.
Yeah, or maybe a bit of a balance. I mean, I think that is the key against the Philadelphia team because of how they want to attack, how they want to defend higher up the field. I think it depends on where St. Louis tries to keep possession. The difficulty is sometimes teams try to build out of the back, and that's where they get themselves in trouble against Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So if it's not on, just alleviate pressure, and I would imagine that would be the first look for St. Louis. And then if they can possess higher up the field, that was a tactic that Nashville used, which really worked to their advantage, especially as the game wore on. But yeah, I think the last thing that usually come with teams is the attack. So if you've been working on defending, if you've wanted to make sure that you're compact and tight between the lines and you don't concede, then the variety and different ways that you can score goals is typically the last thing that comes together. So transition on the break, however you want to call it, but then also the ability to keep possession, we might see as the year goes on for St. Louis.
Now, of course, you know, Ben Lunt got a clean sheet. It was so great to see him get in a game, have a solid defense in front of him, get the clean sheet, which was his first. But if you're going into Philadelphia Union, Bradley Carnell's worked with Ben Lunt. And, you know, anytime you've worked with a player, you know strengths and weaknesses. Could the Philadelphia Union be looking to maybe rattle the defense and rattle Ben Lunt, given that, you know, he hasn't had the same number of reps that Roman Berkey has had over the past 2.5 or so seasons?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I don't think it's something that they're going to say, like, hey, here's a guy that, like, you know, hasn't played a ton of minutes. But I think they are just going to say, listen, let's go after this team. We know they're stingy defensively. We need to get off to a good start. And one of the ways that Philadelphia gains confidence is getting players into the 18-yard box and trying to overload defenses and make them feel uncomfortable. And that's one of the reasons why we've seen Ty Baribo, 6 goals already in 4 games. easy tap-ins because they do overload the 18-yard box. So I think that's going to be more of the conversations, just the talk about them, because I would imagine Bradley Carnell is going to try to say, hey, listen, yes, this is my former team. I don't want to get emotionally involved in it. We need to take care of business, and we need to stick to our game plan and clean up some things that we didn't quite get right this past weekend.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to watch, considering that we know that the number of touches that other teams have, opposition teams have had in City's attack defensive third has been quite high, but yep, they've minimized those touches within the box. So it may not be as successful. We never know with Philadelphia Union trying to get in that box. City's been pretty solid trying to keep out those chances. A little bit of luck on our side, of course, but pretty solid at keeping them out of the 18 versus last year.
Yeah, 100%. And I think they should be going in confident that they've gotten clean sheets. And also, this is going to be a heavily rotated Philadelphia team that with players that are going to try to prove themselves, wanting to get into that starting 11 with so many starters missing.
Lori, thanks for your time tonight. Looking forward to hearing you on the call on MLS Season Pass on Apple TV from Philly.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
You got it. That was Lori Lindsay. She's a game analyst, one of many great ones on MLS Season Pass. You can catch her on Apple TV as City look to take on the Philadelphia Union at their home stadium on home turf. And, of course, against former coach Bradley Carnell on Saturday. That will be March 22nd. Pre-game is at 6 o'clock on Y98, with the game starting at 6:30, as it's an East Coast game. So that's hour number one. It's been a busy hour. Thanks to all of our guests for appearing, especially Kevin Wheeler helping me out with Cardinals baseball. Always enjoy talking with any Apple analyst. Lori Lindsay was my first time chatting with her, so that was great. We're not done, though. We're going to continue the City SC conversation at the start of next hour and then switch over to men's college basketball as we head into the SLU Billikens in their first game of the NIT tournament. More to come. Stay with us for hour number two of the Gray Bar Sports Open Line Raft right after news here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Welcome back into the program. I'm Jen Cease, in for Matt Pauley for a few nights this week for Sports Open Line, Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Kyle Sixta alongside me here in the studio. Moving into our second hour, actually 40 minutes or so, we have leading up to SLU Men's Billiken Basketball taking on number 3 seed Arkansas State in the NIT tournament. That game is at 8 p.m. right here on KMOX, and pregame starts at 7:45. So we'll get out of the show about 7:40 so everything can get set up and that gets started. So stay with us for all the action. In the meantime, we continue our City conversation now. Had a great conversation with Lori Lindsay. She's a former U.S. Women's National Team player, now a game analyst for MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. She also does the NWSL. She had great thoughts on how City is going to head into Philly to take on the Union, a Union that right now is struggling a bit when they have international call-ups, don't have everybody quite available as City takes them on at Subaru Park in Philly on Saturday. However, we always know that we've had Bradley Carnell as our coach before here at City. He is a resourceful and often unpredictable coach when it comes to who he puts in rotation, often liking to shake things up. It will be interesting to see how he approaches City's game against him in his hometown against his former club. In the meantime, a few things going on with City that I wanted to update everybody on, especially as we are in Women's History Month. We've had the fortune of having some great women guests in the booth in the game that have been involved. The last game, Wendy Dillinger was not only on a pregame show, or sorry, a halftime show for City Soccer, but she was in the studio and stadium this past game talking about her achievements and her induction into the St. Louis Soccer Hall of Fame, and that was great to see. So love the fact that City is taking hold of Women's History Month, and something that they are probably currently doing right now as I speak to you. They're having a panel discussion for City SC women's staff at City headquarters. Their staffers in attendance tonight, a special panel discussion Herstory unveiled Her Story, a celebration of resilience and leadership dedicated to recognizing the strength, perseverance, and leadership of women in the community. Panelists there tonight, Joanne Kendall, City SC Ownership Group member, Leslie Gill, president of Rung for Women, and Martha Garcia Campin, president and CEO of the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, who are speaking on breaking barriers, inclusion, and empowerment. That is a theme that Carolyn and Kendall and I talked a little bit about during halftime at the last game about, you know, women taking their rightful place in the game, any game, whether it's the women's side of the game or the men's side of the game, whether it's Lori Lindsay or it's Ross Smith, who we've had on, everybody who has experience in the game or a love of the game or enthusiasm for the game has many places on both sides of that, whether you're front staff or back office staff, or you're working directly with the players who are men or women in their respectful leagues, plenty of places. So it's great to see them drum up some excitement as well as inclusion with that. Speaking along those lines, if you didn't hear about it on our Y98 post game Saturday, this Saturday, March 22nd, as City take on the Philadelphia Union, for Women's History Month, there's a watch party at the Mineta Pitch Club. Women fans are invited to join the club for a watch party there at Energizer Park in the Mineta Pitch Club. They catch the game. I hear they've done this before. I hear it's a great time. I've never gotten to go because I'm in the Y98 studio, usually alongside Kyle or somebody else. But it sounds like it's a great time where they have food and drinks, a caricature artist, pitch side photo opportunities. So you get to be there and you get to go and take a look at that pristine pitch and then watch the game from a great location. So if you haven't done that, tickets are on sale still and you can get a hold of them and maybe participate in the party. I hear it was a great time last year and I'm sure it's going to be a whole lot of fun this year. Well, more to come. We'll talk a little bit more City soccer before we switch gears to basketball. I was at training today and got some thoughts from head coach Olaf Melberg. That's up next on the other side of the break right here on KMOX. Rolling on with the Gray Bar Sports Open Line, Jen Cease in for Matt Pauly tonight. Sticking one more segment with soccer, City soccer. I feel like I get a chance to do that. I cover City as my primary duty. So when I'm in here, if I can get a little bit more in, that's awesome to talk about. I was at training today, and if you listen to the weather report coming out of news, Dave Murray wasn't kidding. It was very windy. The nice part was it wasn't cold. It was warm and it was sunny. In terms of balls, maybe soccer balls going where they should have been necessarily, the wind took them a little bit and the wind took a lot of things on the pitch. So very windy day. Along with other media members, I was there with them along the windy day, and we got to hear from Coach Olaf Melberg. Now, the first topic of interest, of course, that everybody wanted to ask about was Roman Berkey. Now, taking a look at training, all goalkeepers were doing most of the training. Roman Berkey was in training. He didn't do anything with his hands, though, so don't freak out. He's not doing anything there. He does have a fracture, but he was definitely involved in any kicking or anything it had to do delivering balls to Christian Olivares and as well as Ben Lunt taking those practices. So he was involved. In talking to Coach Olaf Melberg, he did confirm that the fracture, which is his left, I believe, hand, would keep him out for about a month or so. And I'm thinking the "or so" part could mean a little bit longer because he did talk about the fact that, you know, any return to play would be very, very cautious, that, you know, small bones are in there and they take some time to heal and maybe they don't necessarily respond well to getting after them too quickly. So they're going to take it cautious with Roman, which means Ben's going to get a few games. And we've seen Ben Lunt come into games before. We've seen him play in the Open Cup. We've seen him actually, I remember when Roman hurt his back, I believe, in a game last season. It was like maybe in the middle of the first half. It was pretty early that Ben had to jump into a game. What we haven't seen Ben be able to do, however, is get a lot of repetition. So he knows he's a backup goalkeeper. He understands that. He knows what kind of role that is. When we talked and heard Lutz talk to Tom Ackerman on Sunday, Lutz talked about the fact that he was a terrible backup goalkeeper, because one of the things you have to do in that position, unlike field players, is once you're, you know, in that role, it's you don't do very much a keeper rotation, like you might rotate players. So he accepts that as his role, and he trains every day, trains really hard. And, you know, coach was pleased with the entire defense in front of Ben, as well as Ben himself.
Our overall defending has been really good and was really, really good in the last game. So we conceded very little. Credit to the guys in the way they helped Ben in that. And yeah, the few occasions they threatened in a good way. So it was a nice clean sheet for him.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. And we'd have a few other player updates from the day. Thomas Totland, we know he came out of the game a little bit earlier than Coach Olaf Melberg would have pulled him out. He pulled his hamstring, saw him walking today, just walking from the training. So I'm sure he did his rehab and then came out to watch training. He's not it's not a position where City has a lot of players. They're not very deep at the right back. So his injury likely caused a need for a sub that potentially affected some sub decisions in the game. That pull of that hamstring will likely keep Totland out for a month, though. So City's going to have to look to make some adjustments there. Conrad Wallum didn't train today. We took note of that, but apparently he just has a bit of a cough. If he's like the cough that's running through my house, it's not going to last very long. And there's still going to look for him to be in the next game. So he should have availability with the Philadelphia Union. Joachim Nilsson, glad he's back training with the team. He, of course, is still working on game fitness level. So as much as the running, as you see, JGR was also doing a lot of running at training. A lot of that cardiovascular work they do in training is not the same as game fitness. It's not the same level. It's not the same intensity. So Joachim Nilsson working on his game level fitness, as well as Tomas Ostrak. We saw him get into the game. He did well. I thought for a moment he was going to have a goal. Coach Melberg talked a little bit about the fact that you could see his lack of game fitness in that first 10 minutes of Ostrak trying to find his breath. But then once he did well in his first game back. And the reason he picked him, maybe over Acelio Pompeu, due to fitting that particular midfield profile position he wanted to have. He's good on the ball. He's better in the middle of the field, in my personal opinion, than Celio Pompeu is. Celio does better on a wing, I think. So a good pick and having him come back. Now, when asked about Joao Klaus, who did not play, of course, and Simon Becher, who did not start, didn't get as many minutes as we might have been looking forward to either one of them doing, Coach Melberg was asked about his decision-making process in the front attack.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at, again, every game individually, how we can get the most out of our players and that position. We felt in this game that we could really use Sedi from start. And then in what the game looked like, we felt it was a good change with Simon. So we'll see for next game what that setup looks like and how they're doing in training, and you know, make a decision accordingly.
That's really interesting when you look back to last season, how many different center back, if you will, or back line rotations did we have with players playing. And it makes me wonder if we might have a more set back at City and a little bit more fluidity on who starts and who combines with who, given the opponent. Coach Melberg talks a lot about, whenever you ask him about particular players starting or playing, he will always go back to what kind of opponent we're playing, and of course then what kind of combination of players is needed. So I don't necessarily see this as, I saw a few comments that Joao Klaus is benched. I don't think that's the case. That Simon Becher maybe doesn't have a starting role. I don't think that's the case. I think it's really given on the day. And of course, as we see City get further and further into a schedule where we get into also the heat, I think a lot of things are also going to change. Now, City traveling to Philadelphia to take on Bradley Carnell's Union. Coach was asked about planning for a potential high press with the very signature move of City's former head coach.
We have a different game plan every week and really looking at what the opponents are doing. So I already have quite a good view, watched the game the other day, and you know, they play in a similar style every game, and I think quite similar to how he played here. So obviously they've done really well. Lost now in the last game, but started really well. So it'll be another tough challenge for us.
Now, with neither City nor Philly having particularly high possession percentages, Coach Melberg went on to talk more about how neither team is really likely having that as a concern for either of them, as long as they're scoring goals. We know that that's for sure for Coach Carnell. Sounds like Coach Melberg's good with that as well. And he talked about the importance of understanding City's identity based on certain qualities.
We are not a team like San Diego or Seattle or LA Galaxy. They have a lot of players who are really, really good individually in possession. I don't think we are there as a team, and we don't have to be. We have other qualities, and if we continue to win games, we are happy. And I think the guys were really happy in the way we played the last game, the effort we put in, and the quality we have in a lot of moves going forward. If we can get a few more of those in a game like this, 4 or 5 maybe really, really good attacks, but we create the danger and chances, if we can, you know, add to that every week. Also understanding the identity we have created, and, you know, the players have created with their qualities, defending as a team and individually is, you know, an amazing effort for them. So keep building on that.
Yeah, City certainly looking to build on not only having that solid, seemingly in some ways, a little bit of luck, but seemingly impenetrable defense, particularly in the box, and looking to build that out and then create more quality. And, it comes in terms of, he talks often about quality on the ball, not losing the ball so easily, holding the ball in possession when it's time to do that. Certainly going on the break when it's needed, when it's there, you definitely go on the break, but maybe not having that as a one-dimensional profile for St. Louis City SC. Their next game is away, of course, as we're saying, in Philadelphia. They take on the Union Saturday, March 22nd. Earlier pregame, that will be at 6 p.m. on our sister station, Y98. Stay with us. We switch over now to men's college basketball. Before we get to SLU men's basketball in the NIT, we'll talk about Mizzou's postseason in the NCAA tournament. Stay with us on the Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Final segment of the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Jennifer Cease filling in for Matt Pauly as we take you up to SLU men's basketball that will start pregame at 7:45. We'll get out of here about 7:40. Joining me now, very happy to welcome Mizzou basketball, Ben Arnett, sports director of KOMU News. Ben, thanks for joining me in the last segment as we take it up to another basketball team playing tonight.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, first, I know we're here to talk about the men's basketball, but since it's timely, wanted to ask you about seeing it on the news. Missouri women's basketball, Mizzou has a new leader, Kelly Harper, former head women's basketball coach at Tennessee. She'll be the new coach at Mizzou. This was just confirmed today.
Yeah, and not entirely shocking. I mean, Kelly Harper is somebody, she's got some family ties to the area. She had a great run at Missouri State 5, 6, 7 years ago. I've gotten to talk to her a handful of times. I do a lot of women's basketball games on SEC Network Plus, and did a lot of them, especially back during the time whenever Kelly was at Missouri State, and they would play Mizzou almost every year. Biggest thing I remember about talking to her, getting ready for games, was obviously your respect for Pat Summitt. She played for Pat Summitt, was a high level player, national champion, honorable mention All-American, all the stuff you're used to hearing about from former Volunteers. And she's really tried to pattern a lot of her coaching, obviously, after the greatest of all time. And I think it's a nice win for Missouri. She did well at Tennessee. That's just a really tough standard to live up to. It's a good opportunity for Missouri, I think, and they needed a change in that program.
Yeah, I was reading her profile, you know, led the Tennessee Volunteers for 5 seasons, got to the NCAA tournament 4 straight times. Definitely a great pedigree to bring into the program.
Yeah, it's just a situation of, in Knoxville, you know, you hang Final Four banners.
Right.
and that's, they weren't able to get to that level, but, you know, she did an excellent job, and she'll know the area too. And I think that's something that the next coach who replaced Robin Pinchon, who was there for 15 years, and Pinchon did a really good job of recruiting the state of Missouri, particularly some of the smaller nooks and crannies here and there, you know, picking up people like Morgan I, who ended up being the greatest three-point shooter in the history of the program from Montrose, Missouri, and other players from small towns. She did an okay job. they need a coach who does a better, more consistent job recruiting in St. Louis, and then also outside of the state of Missouri. When you're talking about competing with programs with some of the best coach and well-run programs in all of college basketball, LSU, South Carolina, obviously Tennessee, and some of the other places, you got to be able to recruit nationally to compete in that league.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's flip over to the men's side, because that's originally why we booked you for the show and then got that news. They've earned their postseason fate. They are earning the sixth seed in the West Regional and facing number 11th seed Drake on Thursday. That's this Thursday, March 20th. You know, overall feelings and vibes of them going in for their first postseason in the NCAA game number one, hopefully.
Well, they love that they're in Wichita. It's only about 4.5 hours. It's only about 4.5 hours from Columbia, and I would know. My wife is from Wichita, so I make that drive about 3 times a year. So if you're in Missouri and you're thinking about going, it's a really easy drive. Just zip over to Kansas City and down 35. But it's really tough to handicap where you expect this team to go this March. The way they've played and as deep as they are, they got a lot of different ways they can play. The way that they played against teams like Florida, who they beat on the road, Tennessee, who they almost beat on the road, Kansas obviously did not have a very KU-like year, but it's still Kansas. You're talking about one of the few programs in the country this year with 3 top 5 wins, but they really struggled down the stretch. I think they need to have a fiery game from Tamar Bates. Now, this is probably their most motivated player. He is unquestionably the leader of this team. It's his last chance. He came to Missouri closer to home. He's a Kansas City kid. He came here for this moment. He didn't get to have it last year. Last year was a disaster and an absolute nightmare for Tamar Bates in his first season with the team going 0-19 against SEC opponents. This is the time. He hasn't played well down the stretch. I'd look for a big game from Tamar Bates for Missouri against Drake. And they also need to get a big game from Mark Mitchell simply because he's the guy that a lot of stuff runs through. Didn't have him, tweaked a knee in the first round win of the SEC tournament. They end up losing in the second round in a close game with Florida without Mitchell. Unclear right now what his status is. It didn't seem incredibly serious when they were in Nashville, but that is definitely somebody that Missouri needs as they get into March Madness.
Yeah, it's just scrolling through the schedule myself and looking at some previous, you know, upsets or at least big ones against Kansas at the time, who was ranked number one, 76-67. Scrolled down a little bit more, and the Florida Gators, that was an upset for sure. So, I mean, Mizzou certainly has the makings of a team that can go deep. However, I think it's like any sport. If you're not winning before you're going into postseason, if you're kind of, you know, on a downward trend, could that take the team and make this their one and only?
Yeah, I mean, they've really got to try to get some momentum going. I think that win over Mississippi State in the SEC tournament was incredibly important for them. Mm-hmm. They did not look like themselves at all the last 2 weeks of the regular season. Now, again, the SEC is tough, 14 teams for a record in this field. And Missouri played well against everybody. I mean, their only double-digit loss was against number one Auburn in the first conference game of the season. A lot has changed since then. I just think it's a team that needs to they will frequently play 8, 9, 10 or more guys. So finding roles was a big part of their journey this season. I think maybe some guys got away from their roles a little bit the last 2 weeks of the regular season. And if they can, everybody can kind of slide back into the things that they're best at here as they get into the tournament, things could turn around in a hurry. A lot of people will easily point to Caleb Grill didn't shoot really well down the stretch. Caleb Grill will be the first person to tell you that for him it starts with his defense and his rebounding. He's trying to shift his focus in that direction in the postseason. Again, they need to really play through Mark Mitchell. And Anthony Robinson, the sophomore point guard, has to get back to his defensive roots without fouling. This is a kid who is the only underclassman to make the all-defensive team in the Southeastern Conference, the toughest conference in college basketball this year, but he's been fouling too much and taking himself off the floor lately. He's got to get back to defending tough without over-fouling so he can be on the court to keep that defense out there and to lead things and keep things in sync offensively.
All right, last question, I promise, and we'll let you go. I got about 45 seconds or so. given if everything goes right, right? If everybody's focusing on what they're supposed to be focusing on, things do happen to click at the right time. What's the ceiling? How far do you think this team can go?
They can go to the Final Four if they play their best.
All right.
And there were multiple SEC coaches who said that this year.
Really?
It's a tough team. It starts with defense. They will battle you. They are battle-tested playing in this league. You look at the way they played against Florida and other teams this season, it's a really high ceiling, but the way they played the last couple weeks, it could be a really low floor, too.
Thanks so much for your time tonight. Appreciate it. And go Mizzou Tigers. We'll be rooting for them.
All right. Anytime. Happy to be here.
Awesome. That was Ben Arnett, sports director of KOMU News, giving us his opinion on the Mizzou Tigers and how far they can go in the NCAA tournament. It sounds like if all cylinders are go and everything's clicking right, they might be able to go far, which, of course, is very exciting. It's a busy show for only an hour and 40 minutes. Thanks to all of our guests from back in the first hour, Kevin Wheeler talking Cardinals baseball, to Lori Lindsay from MLS Season Pass on Apple TV talking City Soccer, as well as having some of that audio from Coach Olaf Melberg today. Always great to have training in front of us and kind of get a sense of how the team's doing earlier in the week as they prep and get ready for, you know, a road game where they're looking to get a result. And then, of course, to wrap things up with Mizzou basketball. Good news on the women's side, getting a new coach that's proven to be time-tested, as well as Mizzou potentially having a good run in. But now, time to flip over to SLU men's basketball. The Billikens taking on Arkansas State in the first game of the NIT tournament tonight. That pregame is coming to you next, real soon on KMOX.